This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
The Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
That's grounded to third. Gorman backs up. He has it. His throw. Got him for a Redbird winner. Hayes grounds out third to first, and this ball game has come to an end. They set off the fireworks in downtown St. Louis, celebrating a 5-0 Cardinal combined shutout. Sonny Gray, Kyle Leahy, and Chris Roycroft.
Yo, Paulie!
Paulie's a great name.
Yo, Paulie!
What'd you do for Paulie? Anything?
Me, Paulie! I was responsible!
Paulie, we're here because of you!
There it is. Cardinals have won 5 straight now. They're cooking with gas, baby.
Cooking with gas. That's a great phrase.
It is time to go to the guest line. We bring in Matt Pauley, who is the host of Sports Open Line. He is the host of the Redbird Rush Hour, which happens at 5 o'clock. He's on with Kevin Wheeler talking Cardinals baseball. But, you know, there might be a baseball game happening at that time. And if there is, you won't get to hear the show. But you hear it every other day. What's up, Matt Pauley?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
Feeling good? Are you feeling good about the birds?
I am. They're playing some good baseball. They accomplished a lot yesterday. So they get to 500. They go 5-1 on a homestand. They sweep a series. They pull into second place, tied in the division. Goodness. I mean, there was just a second straight day of having a starting pitcher go 7 innings. There was so much about yesterday that made it feel really, really good.
Yep. So back to 500. I know that a lot of people probably don't follow the standings this early in the season,
Yeah. But
I'm always paying attention. I'd like to know where they stand at the moment, and they're 3 games out of first place. So looking at the division, I think the Cubs are good. I don't know if they are far and away better than the Cardinals are. So how do you see them in the context of this division?
Yes, yeah, so a couple things. So first off, we do need to, recognize the fact that it is May 8th. So the standings don't mean much. However, I can't tell you how often I get text messages or people calling, and this is just a fourth place team in the division. They're closer to last than first. Like, I hear all these things from people who don't think very highly of the team. So at the very least, I don't have to hear that as much right now. So that's good. That's for me, that is the value in them being closer to the top of the standings. Is it's one less thing that people can use, but I really don't want to use that to throw it in other people's faces.
Let me pause you for a moment. Yes. Feel free to reach out to Matt Pauley tonight at 314-436-7900. Tell him how you feel about the Cardinals in the standings. Okay, go ahead.
Thanks. Appreciate
you're
that
welcome.
Public service.
You could tweet at him, too, at Matt Pauley. If you want to have a Twitter fight with Matt Pauley, it is at Matt Pauley on air.
You know what I like about Twitter fights is that they focus on the humanity of the person, and they are really good on picking up nuance.
Yes.
Yes.
So continue,
yes,
Matt.
Very much. And I have to engage in that. So sometimes I'm disciplined enough to just ignore it.
You should send him Kevin Wheeler's way. He loves it.
He loves it. He does not ignore it. He is not as disciplined as I am when it comes to that. Okay, so the standings don't mean anything. However, I don't think there's much of a difference between the Cubs, Brewers, Reds, and Cardinals. I think you're right. On paper, Cubs probably a little bit better than the other three teams. Although the Cubs are dealing with some pretty major injuries right now. That team does not look the same now as it did even a couple weeks ago. But there's clearly a really bad team in the division. It's the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then the other four teams are very similar to each other. Push comes shove. If I have to choose the best team in the division, unfortunately, I am still probably going with the Chicago Cubs. But it's not a huge difference.
It was a fun game last night. Victor Scott II scored from first twice. And Ben Hockman had a piece in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today. Is Victor Scott II the fastest man in Major League Baseball? What say you, Matt?
It was so much fun yesterday. And just the way it happened. So for him to score from first on a base hit to right, and it was 9.3 seconds or something like that. Sixth fastest time this year in Major League Baseball going first to home. And he stuttered around second. So it wasn't the cleanest run. And it was still the sixth fastest time in Major League Baseball. And then he comes back around and he scores from first on what turns into a double to left. It was only a double because Mason Wynn was just busting it out of the box. That was, for many guys, that would have been another single. So if Mason Wynn would have been running so hard, that could have easily been the second time that Scott scored from first on a base hit. And one of my favorite parts of what he did yesterday was on the first one when he scores from first. That was on a Lars Nootbaar single. By him going home, he forced the throw home, and that allowed Nootbaar to take second, and then Nootbaar was in scoring position himself. So that shows you the impact of speed. Not only is this guy scoring and scoring a run for the team, he's helping the team score more runs because of his ability to go home. That gave Nootbaar another base.
Well, the speed is great, and I know that you got to be on base in order to utilize that speed, which is something that kind of early in the season, the Cardinals have been pretty good just generally at getting on base.
Yeah. Offensively. Now, here's the thing about it. They are, at times it is an all or nothing sort of deal. But right now, true, they're number one in Major League Baseball right now in batting average. They have a .260 team average. The Dodgers are at .259. The Phillies are at .259. So they're a point in front. Who had that? Who on their bingo card had the Cardinals leading Major League Baseball in batting average on May 8th? And you talk about getting on base, from an on-base percentage standpoint, they're at .334. That's like fifth or sixth. Only the Yankees, Mariners, Phillies, Dodgers, and Cubs are better than that. I mean, the offensive numbers in aggregate are great. At times, it's a little bit frustrating because it can be a little bit all or nothing. But come on, we're being picky. When you're top five in just about every offensive category, you should be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I'm pleased with what they've done offensively. You're right, there are those games where they do get shut out, and they are not competitive offensively, but overall, they are scoring a decent amount of runs. So I really can't complain about what they've done offensively. And I guess they could change as the year goes on. Maybe it gets tougher for them, but I don't know. I'm happy. I think you kind of have to be, because it is one of the major reasons that they've have any of the wins they have. The offense has driven a lot of this. Starting pitching has, but the offense has done it.
And it's the bullpen. Victor Scott II and what he did yesterday is probably my favorite part of the last 3 days.
Yeah.
What we saw from starting pitching from Liberatore and Gray is right up there. But let's look at what happened with relief pitching, because I think it's really interesting where the first game you're sitting there and like they go all in to win that game, because the second game is going to be the Paul Skeens game. You have no clue what's going to happen against Paul Skeens, even though they've had some success against him. That's not, if you're going to lose a game in the series, the Paul Skeens game is the game that you are most likely to lose. So they go all in game number one to make sure they get the win there. That way, even if they lose the Skeens game, they still have an opportunity to to win the series in game three. So in game one, they go to the high leverage guys, 7-8-9, with Leahy and Maton and Helsley. So then that puts them in a position where they are unable to use any of those guys in game number two. Well, they don't use Gordon Graceffo for two innings in game number one, so they keep some of his bullets left. If he comes out for a second inning in that first game, all of a sudden he's not going to be available for the second game of the series, but they had him available. He comes in, does a really good job in the ninth inning. They were able to use Steven Matz in that spot as well. Yesterday, they're ready to go to the high leverage guys. All of a sudden, they score a couple more runs. It goes 5-0, and they're able to put Chris Roycroft in a no-pressure situation. One of the problems before Ryan Fernandez got sent down was they were trying to work on him with things, but the team was playing so many darn close games that he kept getting forced into these games in really high-pressure situations, and that's not really a spot that you can work on things. They still want to see Chris Roycroft continue to establish some confidence at the Major League level. So yesterday, by being a 5-0 game, they had the perfect opportunity to put Roycroft in a position where he is going to probably have some success. So I love the way the bullpen played out over the last 3 days.
Hey, Matt, a lot of us, we all saw the play where Nolan Arenado jumped into the stands, landed on a toddler, and he felt bad and apologized to her. And that kind of became the story. But then yesterday, Arenado was scratched from the game because his back was acting up. He's listed as day-to-day. How much concern is there regarding his jump into the stands and now his back bothering him?
Yeah, I think any time that you've got a guy, especially a guy who's a little bit older and a guy who's got a bit of a history with some back issues, you all of a sudden start getting those back spasms, and then that becomes a narrative that exists throughout the entire season. That's one of those injuries that if you're dealing with it, sometimes it's really hard for it to completely go away. So I am concerned that Arenado is going to now be in a spot where that back issue is going to be bothering him all season long. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully he got the day yesterday. He gets the day today. They show up into our nation's capital tomorrow, and he's good to go. But it is definitely something to keep an eye on.
All right, Matt Pauly, tonight's Redbird Rush Hour, or this afternoon, Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock. And then
you go afternoon for 5 o'clock?
I think it's pretty late afternoon.
I think I go early evening for 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Right, let me look this up while you complain about it. Okay,
5 o'clock is early
evening.
I'm
not complaining. I'm just
you're complaining about
Matt, I'm on your side. It's early evening.
I think early evening, yep.
Do you think it depends on what time you wake up?
Does it also... It could, but does it depend on the time of the year? Because in the heart of summer at 5 o'clock, it's really bright outside. If it's January 1st and it's getting dark at 4:30, you can't really call 5 o'clock afternoon.
According to Google, it says 5 o'clock can be considered late afternoon.
No.
Early evening can be...
idiots.
No, I don't think so. Late afternoon, 4 to 5 o'clock, and then actually 4 to 6 o'clock.
No.
Yep.
6 o'clock is not the afternoon.
Late
what
afternoon.
Are you, French?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway.
All right.
So, Redbird Rush Hour, late afternoon. Late afternoon at 5 o'clock, and then you've got the Sports Open Line at 6.
Yes, that is the plan for tonight. 3 straight hours of sports talk here on KMOX.
Awesome, baby. Thanks, dude.
You bet.
Yo, Paulie, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
All right.
No. Just saying, if you asked a girl out and you're like, hey, want to meet up late afternoon? Yeah, 6 o'clock?
I didn't
say
6.
That's a huge red flag.
It's until 6.
That's a red flag.
It ends at 6. 6 o'clock is early evening.
Psychopath.
When we come back, it sounds like we might be screwing something up again in the city, but it's not the city's fault this time.
Okay, well, that's a plus.
It's the state's fault. State of Missouri screws up enough, and it looks like they may be screwing something up for us, potentially. We'll talk to Sean Malone, KMOX reporter, about what's happening with the AT&T building downtown. That is next.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX, and it is time to bring in KMOX reporter Sean Malone, who is with us. And yesterday, Sean, we were having a conversation about the AT&T building downtown, and there is an effort to revitalize it and turn it into a residential area. And from the way I understand it, and if I have this correct, let me know, it sounds like the state of Missouri might screw this up somehow.
Yeah, you could certainly put it that way. That's one way to put it.
All right, so what's going on exactly with it?
So with the AT&T Tower, to rewind a little bit here, it was purchased a year ago from developers based in Boston, the Goldman Group, and they finally shared with us their plans, at least some of their preliminary plans for it. And when you hear what they have planned for this building, it really is pretty incredible. 600 apartment complexes, a robotic valet that will, you know, automatically shuffle cars around to and from the drivers. And enough amenities to fit a small city, if you will, you know, and things like that you're not normally seeing in an apartment complex. You know, grocery stores, clubhouse, cigar lounges, bowling alleys, basketball courts, entertainment centers, multiple swimming pools, indoors and outdoors, a 360 rooftop bar, just to name a few. But what they're saying here is that in markets like St. Louis, they're saying this isn't developer exclusive. This is not exclusive to just AT&T, but you name the Railway Exchange as well, is that the return on investment, considering the cost to revitalize and redevelop those buildings, is just not there compared to other larger metropolitans like a Boston, like a New York, like a San Francisco they named as well, where you can charge some higher rents and, you know, be able to get more juice with the squeeze, if you will. So what they're looking for is a tax incentive to redevelop unused office space, such as AT&T, such as Railway Exchange, into primarily residential space. You think about, you know, what your office might look like, for example, if you're listening to us while at work right now. You might have one bathroom on your floor, and that's fine. That's enough. But a lot of office spaces you need, or residential spaces, you're going to need a bathroom for each apartment unit that you create. So that's a lot of plumbing work that you're going to have to do. It's a quite an undertaking converting office space into residential space. So that's what they're saying is, look, this project is not financially worth it unless we get some help here. Their argument is that, you know, it is worth it for the city and the state to do it, because right now AT&T is just producing property tax, and not all that much at the end of the day, especially when it sells for only a few million dollars.
Right.
So they're saying, look, you know, we'll be able to bring a lot of revenue into the city during construction, after construction, when this building is complete. And the city will still, and the state as well, be taking in more tax revenue after this tax credit than they were before, because there's just not much happening at the moment.
And I know you talked about just like the enormous cost of revitalizing this building. Right now, you said over $350 million, correct?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that, Amy?
Over $350 million to do this project on the AT&T building?
Yes. That's what they're saying it will cost, over $350 million, correct?
Now, they're also saying that typical real estate development dollars will generate an impact at a 3-to-1 ratio, so that this investment could be $1 billion in total economic output. Does that seem high? It seems high. Is that a realistic expectation for something like this downtown?
I'm far from an expert in economics. That's why I work in radio, and my little brother Kevin is the one with the math degree in my family. But when you kind of hear the way they describe it, it makes sense, because you talk about this construction that they want to do. It's going to involve gutting the entire AT&T tower down to the studs and then rebuilding it from the inside back up again. And you just think about, you know, this is one of, if not the largest building in the state of Missouri. That's a lot of construction jobs that this is going to create. That's a lot of, you know, people that are going to be in the city working, filling up on gas over that time. And keep in mind that $1 billion economic impact that they claim this $350 million construction job will create, that's just during the construction process. So that's not any additional revenue from this that the city would get with these 600 apartment buildings that they would create with people now living in those apartment buildings directly downtown.
Yeah.
That's not including the 360 restaurants that they have on the rooftop that's going to be generating sales, you know, through drinks, through meals. You know, so that's where they, you know, that $1 billion, you know, if that math works out, that's just during the construction phase, they're saying, not anything afterwards. And then you've got the addition as well of, you have a large vacant building that is not vacant downtown anymore.
Right.
You know, you don't have to deal with, you know, the vacant building that can attract crime. That's not something that you're worried about in downtown St. Louis, because now this is, you know, assuming the construction goes through with what they've got planned, a building that they say will be on par with any building anywhere in the country, not just the Midwest, not just the city.
So Missouri, okay, where's Missouri come in? Because they are not voting, they have not approved this tax incentive. What's the problem?
Yeah, so from the Business Journal was able to go more in depth on what the problem is. But according to the St. Louis Business Journal, the issue at hand is this is being tied to the bill that's trying to peel back on the sick leave that was approved by Missouri voters at the polls back in November. So this bill is kind of being held hostage at this point for political reasons. The bill to create these tax credits to turn unused office space into primarily residential space. It's kind of being held hostage at the moment.
Hey, Sean, quick question. Oh, did
Yeah. So it's being held hostage. So what does that mean then for the development?
Right now, it looks like the development is in jeopardy. The, you know, Charles Goldman, the managing partner I spoke to, didn't outright say it won't happen, but he kind of said it without saying it. It sounds like this is extremely unlikely to happen this tax credit isn't created, approved.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we find ourselves in the same spot we've been in with AT&T before. Same story all over again. It gets purchased by a developer. Money isn't there to make it work. And then they have to turn around and sell it to someone else at a loss.
Is there a deadline?
And wash, rinse, repeat.
Is there a deadline for this? Like, when does the time run out?
Session ends in less than 2 weeks from now, so the Missouri House is on the clock at this point. If they're going to get this passed, it's got to happen pretty quickly.
Well, here we go. Sean Malone, appreciate it. Thank you for jumping in with us, and keep us updated on this.
Will do. Thanks, guys.
That's Sean Malone, KMOX reporter. Well, at least it's not the city screwing it up this time. This time it's the state of Missouri. They can't get it done. That building is massive. And do you know how much that would change downtown just to get that occupied with people?
Because it would be, like you said, not just a building, but it would be people.
Yes.
600 units.
600 units, visitors going up to the bar and utilizing the amenities there. Oh, come on, guys. Get it done. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. Major Garrett joins the show, 104.1 FM.
It's Major News with Major Garrett, our weekly conversation with CBS's chief Washington correspondent.
Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX. And it is time to go to the guest line today, the chief Washington correspondent for CBS News and host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7. We've got Major Garrett with us on this Thursday. Major, what's happening?
How are you? How is everybody?
We're doing okay. I guess we are all very excited about the Gulf of America now being codified. We saw the vote in the House today that Marjorie Taylor Greene's bill has been approved.
Okay. Well, I mean, that is a process. I'm not sure it's the highest priority for America, but it's a priority for her. The president signed an executive order to that effect. If you're going to make this real, real, meaning lasting beyond an administration, you need an act of Congress. We'll see what the Senate does. We'll see where this goes. But this is where we are.
Yes.
We're actually not there, but because it's still, for the rest of the world, the Gulf of Mexico. The Gulf of Mexico, as we all know, we've come to know, predated the creation of our country. But this is something that is part of our times. And we can just sigh about that and contemplate.
Yeah, well.
Hey, Major, I've got a couple of big picture questions for you regarding the state of our times. Much has been made of the Trump interview when he talks about families and their beautiful little girls can have 3, 4, or 5 dolls instead of 30 dolls. And much was made of that. Or, you know, they don't need 250 pencils, talking about the price of things. But in all seriousness, who is he talking to with that statement? Because what about the families who don't have 30 dolls? They're buying 1 or 2 dolls and now can't buy any. I feel like his statement was directed to a certain group of people, and it's not the average American.
Right. It's interesting. I don't know when it happened, but in this particular conversation in context, President Trump is turned into a granola buying leftist. Okay? Here's what I mean. I grew up in Southern California through the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, in which there was a tremendous conversation about the necessity of America to move away from consumerism, to buy fewer things, have fewer things. Don't give your children so many things. And whatever things you get them, the few that they are, make sure they're locally sourced, produced in this country. It was not conservative Republicans who were saying this, I want you to understand. It was what was regarded at the time by conservative Republicans as granola buying leftists, socialists, people who wanted to create communes, people who were neo-communists. All this idea about the dangers of over-consumerism were spoken of when I was growing up by people who were commonly described as leftists, socialists, commune-loving communists. And there's a part of what Trump is talking about that is sort of oriented in that direction, though I don't think he understands that or recognizes that or maybe even agrees with it. But to your other point, because it's a two-part question, I think, I've given you my take on the first part of it, the 30-to-2 or 3 ratio. But if you're an American with a young child or two children, You're not buying any of them 30. You may buy them whatever you can buy them. And if they're not made where they're currently made and brought here, you're not going to be able to buy even one of them because the prices will simply be too high. Way too high. And the last point I would make about this. So it's kind of insulting to people who do live genuinely paycheck to paycheck and want to provide something of joy and happiness to their children. The last point I would say is anyone who's seen Mar-a-Lago or Trump Tower apartment that President Trump occupies would have a hard time believing he's ever made an austere choice in his life.
Yes. And Major, just to what you said about the origins of some of the language that he's using, you could isolate some of his quotes from that interview and ask someone who said it, Trump or Bernie Sanders. Like some of it sounded like Bernie Sanders, to be honest. If you transcribe that interview, parts of it sounded like Bernie.
Or Karl Marx.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, exactly. a more modern day Karl Marx. You know, he'd have to improve the language and the diction and all that other stuff. But seriously, I'm not kidding.
No, Well, and to that point, Major, as we look at this rise of populism and we look at the language that Trump is using, and I know it's definitely confusing right now. It's most certainly not conservative. I heard some political pundits were talking about the rise of populism and anti-elitism and how it was really spurred on even from like the Bush administration and the Iraqi war and everything that went down with that and the war in Afghanistan and the failures and the lies and so forth, and how that turned people away from classic Republicanism. Do you see it that way? Do you see that timeline?
Well, those are certainly influential factors, no question. Iraq is for the post 9/11 generation, the post Vietnam syndrome generation, a kind of example of theoretically smart people. Because I remember, because I covered it, the formation of the George W. Bush National Security Foreign Policy Team as being sort of regarded as this kind of all-star team, in much the same way that President Kennedy's team of advisors was regarded as the best and the brightest and an all-star team. And though Vietnam was much more ruinous in terms of duration, cost of treasure, cost of life and injuries and death than the Iraq War, both were stupendously wrong choices for the country at the time. And both left the country feeling not only deflated, but demoralized about relying on leaders to make tough decisions for the best future of the country. That's certainly part of it. There's no question about that. Populism, though, I really do think we are stretching the understood definition of populism to apply all of it to Trump, because there's nothing populist about the orientation of this particular tax bill at the top end. Mm-hmm. It's still very straight line Republican. The wealthy people keep all their wealth. You don't tax the things that they make in either income at any particularly high level, and you certainly don't tax their investments or their accrued savings and real estate holdings, none of which are taxed until they're in a transaction. I mean, there are ways to get to that money that are very populist that Republicans simply will not touch and have no intention of touching. And there's really not very much populist about going about Medicaid or food stamps necessarily, especially when many of those programs in the last 20 years have found their ways in statistically higher numbers by population and by ratio of population within states into quote unquote Trump populist states. So it's all very confused right now. It's very hard to come up with apt terminology. Trump breaks a lot of norms, and one of the norms he breaks, it's all the understood terminology we have about political movements in this country.
Major, what do we know about the trade deal that was been that is being or has been worked out with the United Kingdom?
Oh, no.
Wow. I didn't know it was going to be funny.
Come on.
This is like brushing your teeth. Okay? This is simpler than brushing your teeth or making yourself a cup of tea, okay? We trade $148 billion with Great Britain. We run a $20 billion trade surplus, which apparently means, according to the President of the United States, we've been ripping Great Britain off for a long time. So I hope economic justice will be returned to the realm via this trade deal. I mean, for God's sake, they are, not only do we have a special relationship, there is not one thing commercially between our countries that's a hassle. I don't know why this took even 1 hour, let alone 3 or 4 weeks. The markets are not impressed by this. This is the simplest tap-in putt on any golf. It's a tap-in putt on a miniature golf course, okay? This ought to impress no one under no set of circumstances. And if it's followed up by South Korea, I will remind everyone, we already have a free trade agreement with South Korea. That's where we are. None of the hard stuff is being done yet, folks. It may get done. I'm not saying it won't, but this is not one of them.
Well,
okay.
speaking of things getting done, and I know you are a connoisseur of American history. You know this. So we keep talking about the first 100 days, and that has been in relation to regarding Trump's record-setting number of executive orders. But the original the original phrase, the first 100 days, was that not, or at least popularized, with FDR, and it was not his executive orders, but what legislation he could push through Congress?
Yeah, so if you had seen my show, America Decides, on the 100th day, I opened it saying, let me tell you something that I know that you probably suspect. This 100-day thing is completely phony. It's applied one time in American history and one time only, and that's FDR. That's the only time it has at any relevance at all. It was never spoken of before FDR's presidency, and it's had no true relevance since. When FDR took over, the banks were on the verge of collapsing. He called Congress back into emergency session, because Congress didn't meet back in those days at the time of the inauguration, March. Called them back into emergency session. The original idea was just to have them pass bank legislation, then send them back. But then once they passed the bank legislation, they said, you know, they're here. We've got this agenda. Let's go. 77 laws. Let me repeat that. 77 laws were passed and signed in the first 100 days of FDR's presidency, in addition to 99 executive orders. There is no accumulation of legislation and executive orders that matches that or ever will match that. Why? Because the crisis was the crisis of our country's history, setting aside the Civil War. Unemployment was 25% when FDR became president of the United States in 1933, and it required a lot of activity, and a lot of activity came in those 100 days. It's the only time it's mattered, and every other media-obsessed assessment of 100 days since has been pretty much phony.
Major Garrett, is there anything you would like to share with us? Anything else? Anything? And you can, it can be about something you're doing or just something that's on your chest and you'd like to get it off, because it, I feel like.
Next week.
Okay.
Next week.
All right.
This is so much suspense.
But I will say, if you watch my show, you'll get the honesty for me to say this 100 days thing is phony.
Okay.
You don't get that many other places. You'll get it with me. I'll tell you the truth.
That's why we love you.
It's one of the many reasons we love you.
Yeah, there are lots of them. Major.
I love you more.
And you love us?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. Right back at you.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
What you said. Yes.
Hey, we'll talk to you next week. And we hope
I will have so much to say next week.
I want you to have a great day today.
Yes.
You too.
God willing, Major.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Major Garrett, Chief Washington Correspondent, CBS News, and America Decides. That's his show. It's on CBS News 24/7. Sometimes I get the feeling that Major is just over it.
I can't believe he still talks to us every week. He could big time
us. Over us.
Yeah.
He's over it.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
I thought he was over us.
No. Come on,
dude. He could big time us.
It's Chris and Amy, 104.1 FM KMOX. Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji on KMOX. Actually, it's actually Amy Marxist Kors, in case you didn't know. You're listening on the Odyssey app, are you? Hello. 104.1 FM, KMOX. We are on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. If you want to watch us, we're at Chris Amy KMOX. We just had a good conversation with Major Garrett, who did, I think, he just sounds like he's done with it. Done with the whole thing.
I'll tell you what, Major loves this country.
He really does.
He loves this country.
Let's talk to Paul, who joins the show. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Hey, I wish I would have gotten a chance to talk to the Garrett fellow, because the video record from on YouTube alone has shown Donald Trump being for American business and working men on Oprah's show in the 80s, Letterman show in the 80s, back when he was the the darling of the media, and Trump was easily more anti-NAFTA than Ross Perot was when President Bush and Clinton both supported it. So I think it's just really odd that these Trump-deranged journalists like Major Garrett don't ever have any moment of clarity of say, oh, geez, wow, maybe I was kind of wrong about Trump, or maybe he isn't quite what I the vile character that I think he is. And I just think it's just so absurd that they don't have a moment of revelation or of reconciliation with that.
Well, first of all, and we appreciate the phone call, Paul, but in no way is Major Garrett deranged. He's just not. And I think that he is as honest and as level-headed as any guest we have on this station. I think he's absolutely fair. He's absolutely fair. And Paul, I just disagree with you. And I don't think Donald Trump's record suggests that he is pro-worker. He was against like a $15 minimum wage. He's anti-union. He very clearly anti-union. He has stiffed contractors back, you know, going back decades. So,
well,
I wouldn't say that he is a pro-worker guy. I don't think his record at all suggests that.
Well, and it's a confusing record, Paul, because he's switched political parties five times between Republican and Democrat. So you mentioned NAFTA, and Trump did in Trump's first term, got rid of NAFTA and created the USMCA. That was his creation. And now he's saying that we're being abused by other countries and we're being taken advantage of. But the USMCA was his creation. So why did he create a trade agreement that is horrible?
Are
you there, Paul?
Yes, phone's cutting out. Paul, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
I said, well, all these deals are always in a state of flux with the complexity of the world. But I think if you just look at the fact that he was always for American business first, and he's for us not to be abused militarily. And I guess, you know, you'd have to have members of your family that have died in foreign wars to feel this way. But I mean, Donald Trump's the first president, Republican or Democrat, ever to take on the world for the fact that we've been defending them primarily for the last 100 years, maybe even longer if you count World War
I. I know we have to go here because we're getting up on the break, but I think you would agree that us defending other nations isn't just us. It's not altruism.
It's defending ourselves.
We have our own interests.
Because otherwise,
we are defending
China will take the side.
That's why we have military bases around the world. It's not because we want to be the police. It's because it benefits us. Us defending Ukraine, for example, and giving them money or giving them arms it's protecting our interests. It's not just we're being nice guys. That's not what it is. We appreciate the phone call, though, and you are all welcome to join us. When we come back, we've got measles in Missouri, and we have it in St. Louis.
Yeah.
It's here. There's at least one case that we know about. Candace DeMatteis is the Vice President of Policy and Advocacy for the Partnership to Fight Infectious Disease, and she will tell us what we need to know next on 104.1 FM.